What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America. For America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Folks, there's been daily updates as it relates to President Donald Trump's visit to the Middle East. He was in Qatar the other day, his second stop on a tour of the Middle East, and he's been welcomed in a very overt way and actually in a kind of an incredible way in each one of his stops in the Middle East. But negotiating deals, but what are these deals really all about? And Victoria Coates, Vice President of the Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy with the Heritage, joins us. Victoria, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me on.
So, you know, there's a lot of hoopla about what's going on in the Middle East, but not a lot of reporting on a granular level as to what we're actually accomplishing. You posted a piece talking about building on the Abraham Accords that no one ever thought that the Trump administration, his first time around, was going to be able to achieve. He did so. Is that what a lot of this is about?
I think that's exactly what the president is signaling here. And if you go back to his first trip in June of 2017, look what he did, because official presidential travel is planned way in advance. It's designed to send messages to set up policy successes down the road. And he went from Riyadh to Jerusalem to Rome. He went to the centers of the three Abrahamic faiths, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. And that was unprecedented. It was a historic flight from Saudi to Israel that had never been done before, particularly by something so public as Air Force One. And, you know, it was a little shocking at the time, but that was the message the president was sending, as he was going to break those old taboos and those old bigoted norms against contact between Israel and Arab neighbors. So that is what started to change the paradigm. And we got to the Abraham Accords at the end of the first term between Israel and UAE and Bahrain and Morocco. And so this time, I think what the president was doing was saying, you know, I am open for business. And he took 30 CEOs with him. This has never happened before, that the president would travel with people like Ronald Lauder and Stephen Schwarzkopf and Larry Fink and Jane Rosen, or Fraser rather, from Citicorp. I mean, this is incredible. And I think what he's saying in this trip is, we are going to bind you, wealthy monarchies of the Gulf, to the United States through finance and technology. And that's the American deal of the century.
You know, the interesting thing about this, a lot of folks say that the October 7th terrorist event in Israel took place because there were those, Iran in particular, were really concerned about the coming together of Arab nations, the Israelis and the United States, as a result of the Abraham Accords. And one would think that there's probably no better time than right now, as you pointed out, to revisit that and send a message that they're not going to be deterred as long as the Arab nations are willing to sit at the table with these folks. And it seems as though there are.
I think so. And regarding October 7th, that was very much the brainchild of Yahya Sinwar, the deceased leader of Hamas in Gaza, who after the 2021 war, when Israel was able to effectively neutralize all the rockets he was firing at Israeli civilians out of Gaza using Iron Dome, he realized he needed a different kind of attack. And he started thinking at that point about what would become October 7th. But certainly his planning was accelerated by persistent rumors that the Prime Minister Netanyahu and the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman were considering normalizing relations. I would say despite the interference of the Biden administration, which was not close to either Netanyahu or MBS, but they wanted to do it. And I do think the Iranians panicked at that point. And the Biden administration had not been focused on collecting intelligence on the Iranian proxies that might have revealed this plot. And the guard was down. So that horrible thing happened. But what's been amazing to me, and I just got back from Israel 10 days ago, is the fact that the Abraham Accords have endured through over a year of war, which, you know, was designed to disrupt them. Trade between UAE and Israel expanded last year. We met with UAE's fantastic ambassador to Israel, who's still in his post. When we were there and, you know, posted pictures online, and it's all very public and above board. So I think, you know, that is a really, really hopeful sign. And, you know, despite the horrific nature of October 7th shows that, you know, President Trump, as you said, is not going to let that hold us hostage. He's going to keep building on successes and bringing our friend, partners and allies together.
It's interesting. You don't hear what you just talked about much in mainstream media at all, right? I've not heard. I hear you chuckle, but I mean, that's quite the accomplishment that it has survived, right? And there's still the willingness, in spite of a lot of uncertainty, that they hope to achieve with that horrific nature of October 7th.
No, it really is. And, you know, our friends in the legacy media, you know, for them, the narrative is that Trump is a grifter. He doesn't understand diplomacy. He doesn't understand international relationships or diplomatic norms or whatever you want to call them. And I think that's a good thing. That may be true. And I think it stands him in good stead rather than bad. But for them, the notion that Trump saw his way through an intractable problem. You know, we had John Kerry lecturing us in 2016 that there could be no normalization deals until the Palestinian situation was solved. And President Trump, after trying to solve the Palestinian issue, I mean, he did give it a try. I was part of that for a year. But he said when he couldn't get the deal, he's like, I'm not just going to keep wasting time on this. Who does want to make a deal? And that's when UAE and Bahrain and then later Morocco raised their hands and said, you know what, we're not going to give them a veto either. And we had progress. And that is, you know, very, very hard, I think, for legacy media to agree, to understand. You know, for them, they were much more comfortable with President Biden and, you know, Anthony Blinken and Jake Sullivan, the people who worked for him, much more traditional, you would say, establishment foreign policy types. And President Trump is going to have none of that. And so, as I was saying before, his big innovation this time is economic diplomacy, that he's going to bring the most powerful tool the United States has, more powerful than any weapon. And that's saying, you know, that's even while we have the most powerful military in history, his most powerful weapon is our economy and what we can offer in terms of that and technology. And he brought that with him. And, you know, that could set up this extraordinary flowering of economic commerce between the Persian Gulf. He apparently has gone back on calling it the Arabian Gulf because a lot of Persian Americans actually think it's part of their heritage as well. So I'm going to stick with that. But that these wealthy, growing, dynamic countries, he's going to bind those to the United States.
What's interesting is the same legacy media, they don't argue the point that we didn't really achieve a whole lot of successes with the traditional diplomatic landscape that, that we have created in the United States, right?
No, no. And I think that is an important point on both sides of the aisle, because we have a lot of establishment Republican foreign policy types who are also deeply disapproving of what President Trump is doing. You need look no further than, you know, Peggy Noonan's column in The Wall Street Journal today, in which she is deeply dismissive of this trip and what the president is doing. And that is literally the Republican establishment speaking there. And so, you know, I think those of us at the Heritage Foundation, who, rather than being establishment Republican foreign policy people, we see ourselves as conservative national security people. You know, we see this as a huge opportunity and are extremely supportive of what the president is trying to achieve here for our country, which will make us more safe and make us more prosperous. And that's just common sense. That's not some kind of magic formula. But as I said, the establishments on both sides of the aisle.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Can't see it.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, you know, when you think about moving into Europe, just for a second, if you don't mind. The German chancellor announced, I think it was yesterday or maybe this morning, that their target is now on defense spending of 5% of GDP, which is far greater than what President Trump ever asked for. But when he actually backed these NATO allies in a corner as to what their spend was going to be, and now that they're facing the reality of what's going on in Ukraine, it seems as though there's a lot more willing players and partners revealing themselves.
It really is. And it was interesting to me because after the dust up in the Oval Office with President Zelensky, you had Germany and some others come out and announce they were going to increase defense spending as if this was an act of defiance against the United States, that this was somehow telling Trump off. Like, well, it's exactly what he wants you to do. And I don't care why you do it, as long as you do it. And
that's an interesting spin.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I mean, we had to laugh looking at the Twitter feeds of people like Kaja Kallas, who's the chief EU diplomat, you know, saying, "Time, you know, we're stepping up. It's time for a new leader of the free world." Like, okay, you know, go to town. There are more people involved than there are in Estonia.
Didn't he? Yeah, I mean, I think he said all along, the U.S. needs to back out of that leadership role. Yeah. Y'all need to take a more proactive role in the future of your homeland, right?
That's it. And the thing is that the United States has been at 3.5% of GDP on defense spending. And as the largest economy in the group, you know, that is a powerful pile of change. And yes, we probably should do more. We should look at ways to do it more efficiently. But the reality was the next largest economy, so we're talking the UK, Germany, Italy, France, Canada at 1.38%. These countries were all barely at 2%, if not well beneath it, as Canada, Italy, Netherlands have been. Spain also is in that group. And we, I mean, it's great the countries like Estonia are at 3.5 going to 5 already. That's wonderful. But as I said, there are more people in Dallas than there are in Estonia. That is a percentage of GDP is admirable, but it's not enough money. And so I think to have a country like Germany come out and say, we are actually going to do this, and to have the rest of Europe not react in horror, as would have been the case 80, 100 years ago, you know, that is progress for Europe. And it's necessary in advance of the upcoming NATO summit in The Hague in July. You know, we're actually sending observers from Heritage for that. We want to see actual material progress on the part of the Europeans, not just pledges. We want to see money on the barrel head. We want to see contracts being signed, and we want to see defense industrial bases being expanded. So it'll be very interesting to see how all this plays out.
Yeah, and I think the other importance of that, and I think you would agree, is that, you know, Germany is really kind of the leading country of the EU, right? So when you're talking about the economic side of all of this, it sends a strong message and is emblematic of maybe where, you know, the EU collectively and collaboratively together will begin to figure out what they're going to be doing as it relates to fiscal policy and certain policies within Europe that are going to be helpful to achieve that 5% spend. Your thoughts?
No, I think it is absolutely necessary. And the conversations we've had with them, particularly during the transition, but even during the first 100 days of the second Trump term, I mean, they'll come to you with, you know, tears in their eyes, wringing in their hands, saying, please don't let them leave NATO. And my response is, that decision is in your hands. You are the ones who are deciding that. And if you all get your act together and do what you said you would do more than 10 years ago in terms of investing appropriately in your defenses, then we will be right here with you. But we can't care about Europe's security more than Europe does, especially when we also have to care. We are not just an Atlantic country. We are also a Pacific country. So we have to care about the Pacific, and we have to care about the Middle East much more materially than Europe does. That's why the president's first trip went to the Middle East. He knows how important that region is to us. So I think if Europe is serious about this, we can have, you know, a real revitalization of the transatlantic relationship, or revitalization of NATO, that will be really good for all of us. But they have to have skin in the game.
We're visiting with Victoria Coates, Vice President of Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage. This whole jet thing, there always seems to be a sidebar with President Trump that, you know, that is a friction point, not only for Democrats, but for Republicans as well. There's some recent reporting about this certain Qatari sheik who actually has had control of that plane, for the royal family, who's got a dubious past, to be kind, at best. Your thoughts?
No, I think it's an unfortunate distraction, because I think the president's message in going to all three of the wealthiest Gulf monarchies was to send the message that America needs all of you, and we need you together. And hey, by the way, Qatar, we are a better partner than Iran, which is 100% the case. So I think that was the message. I think the offer of the plane was a sincere one. Obviously, massive contracts with Boeing were just signed by Qatar on this trip. This is a Boeing plane that they had that they don't need anymore. Boeing, in all of its glory, is not going to be able to deliver the Air Force One that was supposed to be done, I think, last year until 2027 or 28 at the earliest, and that's probably going to run long. So, you know, this was an offer, and it kind of caught the president's fancy. You know, we hand out all sorts of free stuff around the world as the United States. Why shouldn't we get something in return? But I think unfortunately it's become a distraction. So, you know, I don't know what they're going to do about it. Ultimately, having traveled on the plane that's most usually, I mean, whatever the president flies on is Air Force One. The plane he but usually lies on having flown on that plane. It isn't great. He's not wrong that it's not a terrific advertisement.
It's pretty damn old, isn't it?
It would be. Yeah, it's pretty old, and it's not very comfortable. And either for him or anybody else, I've seen cabinet secretaries sitting at the conference table sleeping, you know, with their heads on the table. You know, that's just not a great look. So all of those things are true, but because Qatar is sort of a hot button topic right now, I think, as I said, this is a distraction. Hopefully they'll just get past it and the rest of the trip can really shine through.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think at the granular level, there are some great things that are being accomplished there. And more importantly, as you pointed out, this building on the Abraham Accords, sending a message, and it's really kind of tightening the grip around Iran. I think, as you pointed out earlier, that's, you know, the byproduct really is the indirect, or actually not indirect, direct byproduct of all this effort, right?
Absolutely. And the other thing I'd raise is the meeting between President Trump and the new president of Syria, whatever he calls himself today. He keeps changing his name. I call him al-Gawlani because that's what I've known him as for these many years, when he's been actually a sanctioned terrorist on our Rewards for Justice program. Extraordinarily, the sanctioned terrorists met with both the Saudi crown prince and the president of the United States in Riyadh this week in a very clear message to Iran that they are out of Syria. The United States and Saudi Arabia are in. And in terms of, you know, the sort of nature of this individual, there is no person on the planet who has more reason to fear ISIS than Mohammed bin Salman. They are a direct threat to him physically, personally. And if he is comfortable with al-Gawlani in this role and sees a strategic advantage to it, then I think President Trump is right to take his counsel and see this as an opportunity for America to keep the Iranians and the Russians, I would add, out of Syria, and to establish another potential friend for the United States and even another potential member of the Abraham Accords, which 6 months ago would have seemed like pie in the sky. But now it's possible. And so that is progress.
Not to make light of it, but politics has strange bedfellows, and foreign diplomacy probably does as well, right?
Indeed.
Sometimes for us, unlike you, because you're in it every day, it's a head scratcher.
I mean, yeah. No, it's a head scratcher to be for us as well. But you try to look for the silver linings when you can find them.
Absolutely, Victoria Coates, Vice President Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage. Really enjoyed this conversation. Have a great weekend, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks. You too. Take care.
We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nerds. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.